mics up?
Thanks.
I think they are.
He's frozen again.
Mics are live. At this time, we will continue today's study session. As a board, we have decided to move to the last item on our study session agenda because we had people in the room for this presentation and we were running a little behind. So we'll move to the item on Jeffco Innovation Acceleration Fund. This will be our final discussion today as we move the other agenda item till the 16th of April. Today we will learn about the Acceleration Fund and the 2017-18 application process and the innovations selected through that process. For those who don't remember, on January 11th, the Board of Education approved a $1 million fund for the Jeffco Innovation Acceleration Fund. Following that approval, the staff facilitated an application process which resulted in the March identification funding of 10 innovative projects for Jeffco. Board of Education will hear a report on the process, outcomes, lesson learned, recommended next steps for the Innovation Fund, and comments from recipient innovators in Jeffco. So with that, Dr. Glass, anything to add to that?
Yes, we've been quite pleased with how this turned out and excited about the 10 projects that we funded out of the Innovation Fund. We also learned some lessons. You'll get to hear about those today and going forward, how we plan on incorporating those lessons into the process going forward. And then we'll end with a request for some direction from you or some guidance from you. We're in much that same place that we were a few months ago in that we're trying to think ahead and how we might get these structured and funded and the process going in a timely manner. We can either do that sort of this spring, this month, or we wait until the fall. There are advantages and disadvantages to both of those. So just have that in your mind that we've got some thinking to do around how we want to take the next step with this Innovation Fund. But I'll turn things over to Tom McDermott.
Okay.
Good morning, and we're joined here by some of our Innovation winners who we'll hear from in a little bit. But maybe if we could just do a quick introductions from our recipients.
Griff Worth.
Jesse Swift.
Amy Thompson.
Colleen Dodge.
Jason Henry.
And for those of you that join us at the table, we are broadcasting to millions of people around the world, so you'll need to speak into a microphone so that we make sure we hear you on the recording. Thank you.
Good morning, and we are really excited to engage in this conversation. So to structure the conversation, Lisa Summit, who played a really important role in supporting the innovation process, she'll provide an overview and some of the data from the first round of the fund. Then we'll hear from our innovators, who are the recipients of the Innovation Fund. I'll then share some of the lessons learned through this process and how they're informing our recommendations for supporting innovation moving forward. And then I'll talk briefly about the monetary implications for our recommendations and looking to, as Dr. Glass said, looking for some direction from the board. And with that, I'll turn it over to Lisa.
Hi. It has been both an honor and a privilege to be part of something.
Grab that mic.
Can you hear me now? So it's been both an honor and a privilege to be involved with something that allows so much creativity and innovation to transform experiences for Jeffco students. My name's Lisa Summit, and I'm currently a TOSA with the title EdTech Specialist. But most importantly, I am a Jeffco generation. So I went to Hutchinson, Dunstan, and Green Mountain, taught at Jefferson and O'Connell, and my son and husband are both proud Lakewood Tigers. So, in all my years at Jeffco, it's been a while since I have seen something that has stirred up so much excitement. The Jeffco Innovation Acceleration Fund was well thought out, and details were meticulously plotted out and followed. Once the application opened, there was an immediate response from educators and leaders and others across the district. 104 applications were received to the tune of $9.3 million in ask. Of those 104, special care was taken to vet those applications. So the scoring team got together and they normed the rubric. So they went through a pretty in-depth dig into the rubric to understand what the rubric was asking from the applicants. So from that, 51 applicants made it to the pitch round. And oh, what a sight the pitch round was to behold. One of the best experiences ever. The passion that each applicant and each applicant team brought to their presence that day was amazing. So the total monetary ask of the 51 innovations equaled $6.2 million. Of those 51, 10 innovations were funded. And you're going to hear from some of those people sitting around the table with us today. Last week, I was lucky enough to join these 10 applicant teams or these 10 innovation teams in a design thinking seminar and got to watch these innovations really come to life. So, all right, so let's jump into this. Of the 51 applicants that made it to the pitch round, the 10 chosen are pretty diverse. So the Jeffco Innovation Acceleration Fund will support the creation of a STEM makerspace with tons of community partnerships in one of our elementary schools. The Jeffco Innovation Acceleration Fund will engage some of our most unengaged students and get them excited about school again. It will create pathways for some of these students. It will bring an entire articulation area together in an academy program, which will offer many innovative options for students to get real-world skills. And these funds will enable the local school to once again become the community hub in which students can experience mentorship and civic and global engagement. And with that, we'll start to hear from some of our recipients. So, Griff, I think you're up first.
Thanks. Okay, it does work. I want to thank you guys for being leaders in innovative thinking. Truly, if we want to provide opportunities for all kids, we need to think differently. So thanks for doing that. So our innovation is Career Explorer. And we started working on this about 4 years ago, and it really is our frustration for a long time for at-risk students and the lack of opportunity that we provide those students in education. Earlier in the conversation, I heard some of the things come up from you guys that frustrated us. For example, are there enough seats? And sometimes it's, are there enough seats right now? If a kid walks into my office and they finally say, you know, I'm ready to jump on board and get this. Well, is there a seat at an alternative school now, or do I turn that kid off for another 6 months until there's a seat in August? Transportation was brought up. So there's a lot of barriers that we were trying to solve. We did a root cause analysis and had in-depth interviews with all of the students that we could identify who looked like they were on a path to dropping out. It gave us some really interesting information. We found out that there is a pretty common thread for a lot of these kids. First, they don't see relevance in traditional learning. The traditional classroom is not meaningful. That leads to a disengagement problem. They quit coming to school or quit engaging in depth. And then following that, there's a loss of hope. And we know once we lose hope at anything in life, we don't have good chances. So we needed to design a program that would take those three things and try to solve the problem. So we created Career Explorer, which is a work-based learning program for at-risk only kids. What we did, first, you heard who's identified. Think of kids who are behind on credits, 504, second language speaker maybe, for whatever reason, they're behind in learning. They're at-risk students, at risk of dropping out. After we found them, the first phase of Career Explorer is a phase in which we are trying to re-engage and provide relevance. Their core curriculum is modified. So they have their core classes, but now it is modified to align with industry and work learning, much more career-ready than it would be college-ready. We also have a Career Explore block that the students take at that point in time with two primary focuses. The first is to explore a career. Think about research, think about mentoring with professionals, and field experiences where they go learn what careers are about. The second part of that is soft skill development. These are students who are behind also in soft skills. We can't have them work ready or career ready if they don't have quality soft skills. That's phase one. Phase two then becomes industry skills training. So we take our students, and now this is offsite. Our partners right now are in healthcare, construction, and hospitality, and we're continuing to try and build those up. But those are the three that we've really figured the pathway out with. So our healthcare partner for training is the Area Health Education Center. They go to Lutheran or St. Anthony's, and they take the kids and they put them through healthcare training, micro-credentialing types of things, and get them ready for work. Then when we get to phase three, that's the application phase. So now students are required to apply what they've learned between soft skills and work skills, and they have a paid internship where we hope we can provide a business with 160 hours of quality work time from our students. So that's what our innovation is. Much more complex. That's a 50,000 foot view. I did put together some folders that you can take a look at when you have more time. And it does have things like there's a return on investment in there. And so there, we have thought about many of those things about why we're doing this work. And with that, Jesse Swift.
Thank you very much. I really want to extend my appreciation for one, being selected, and two, being here today to present to you our idea for the Golden High School STEM Lab. The JEFCO Innovation Fund will be used to create a classroom that is based around student-centered projects. Teaching a 9 through 12 STEM class brings challenges with stimulating every student at their own level. So through the new setup of this classroom, students will earn badges based on the learning objectives they've completed, from technical skills like soldering, CAD, and vinyl cutting, to presentation opportunities, career exploration, and community engagement. The JEFCO Innovation Fund will provide a 3D printer, laser cutter design, the Innovation Fund is providing 3D printer and other, sorry, 3D printer and other machines to help the students design objects for fundraisers around school or any other type of opportunity that they want. They could create t-shirts for their clubs. They could also just focus on programming and spend their time learning more about Raspberry Pis. So the whole idea is that each student creates their own learning path through the class, and that the workspace will be completely set up for them individually. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
So my name is Tammy Thompson. I'm a 5-6 STEM classroom teacher at Van Arsdale Elementary. It seems like robotics and coding are kind of the hot STEM topics right now. And so I did bring one of the robotics kits that the grant has generously provided. But I don't teach only robotics. My innovation was that this kit will build a robot that is codable with directions and YouTube videos. But I want kids to understand the basics of machines and mechanical engineering, and understanding that robots are different based on their purpose and their use. So your generosity also bought small mechanical engineering kits where kids are learning about levers and pulleys and gears, and those smaller kits are motor controlled. The middle size kit is a little bit more complex and comes with a kid-friendly CAD design program, so kids have are learning to design machines based on their purposes. And then the final product then is not building a robot from a kit, but building a robot that does a specific task from the kit that they have designed. We have partnerships right now with mechanical engineering parents, but next year we've already partnered with the Society of Women Engineering, the SWE group, at Colorado School of Mines. So thank you for your generosity. My kids were super excited when all those boxes arrived in the office for Mrs. Thompson's class.
All right, my name is Colleen Dodge. I am a secondary teacher at Fletcher Miller. So for those of you guys that don't know, Fletcher Miller is a school for kids with significant cognitive and physical disabilities. So through our UIP and through the PLC process this year, we just identified a real big need for preparing our students for post-secondary life. For our students, that usually means life at home or some sort of adult day program that they'll be participating in. So with a multidisciplinary team, we had a speech therapist, a PT, an OT, and a nurse involved in kind of talking about what we needed at our school. And we decided we needed a space that our students could access. So we have a kitchen at our school where students learn cooking skills, they learn laundry sorting tasks, some personal hygiene, and some personal care needs. But our space was incredibly dated. So we decided that we needed some smart appliances in our kitchen, so that's what the Innovation Fund is mostly going to be funding, are some smart appliances. But what that means for our students is instead of observing us participating in daily activities and hoping that they're absorbing it, now they get to participate. So either through an iPad or through their communication devices, all of our students are using some sort of alternative communication. So that means eye gaze, switch access, all sorts of different activities. Now they can access the appliances through those devices. So they can start the laundry, they can start our oven, they can start our microwave. One of the coolest things that we bought was a refrigerator that has a camera in it. So when we take students out on community-based activities, they can see what's inside our refrigerator, make decisions about what we need to buy, what we don't need to buy, what we already have. So basically just the magic of technology that makes our lives easier makes a whole world available to these kids that has not been available. And then we have been communicating with DDRC, which is the Developmental Disability Resource Center. They offer some help families get grants through the state when students hit transition age that they can use to adapt their houses. So if something is working for one of our students, they can then help them apply for those grants so that they can then have these materials in their home, which means that kids are in the kitchen with their families, in the laundry room with their families, as opposed to in another room or just observing. So thank you. I mean, it really does open up a world for our kids that you can't even imagine. My oldest brother is 52 and has cerebral palsy, and having him in our house, he couldn't do so much with us, and this type of stuff, I just think, would have changed our lives. So thank you.
Sure. And one of the other things we thought about is after students leave us and they go to day programs or they go home, it's always, what are we going to do with our student or that client? And one of the things we pitched at the meeting, at our pitch meeting, was we don't want the innovation to stop at Miller. We want to be a beacon. So if we have these kids with these skills going out after they turn 21, a day program may say, well, how did they learn that skill? And then they come to Miller, oh, wow, look what you have. Or other schools in Jeffco who may have medically impacted kids can say, well, how do we get those skills? Or there's a school that has this in place, so let's go learn from them. So we don't want it to just be a Miller thing. We want it to go out into the community so that people can learn and our population will help people learn how to, you know, teach them and let them know that these kids have skills. They can do things. It doesn't have to be, I'll do this for you all the time. Our kids are very, very engaged. So it's nice when they are doing the activity instead of the adult, I'm going to do the activity for you and just assume you like it or you do this. You like it this way. So this way, our students are prepared when they leave and they can be as independent as possible in their adult life.
Thank you, guys. So as you guys can hear, with good reason, we're extremely proud of the innovations that received funding. And I think our innovators set a really high bar for what innovation means in Jeffco. And we also learned quite a bit through this process. And I think that there are some important lessons learned that where we can support innovation at a broader scale. So one of the things that we heard from applicants is that there was really valuable for them to work with their colleagues in pitching their idea and coming together and planning, and that's something that we want to support all applicants with. So one of the lessons learned and ideas moving forward is rather than having a round one vetting process, which narrows the number of applications, is that any applicant who submits an application, that is an entry ticket to a design event in which they are supported to flesh out their ideas and align their ideas to the strategic direction. And following that design sprint, applicants would then have time to develop a prototype during that day and then have a small-scale implementation of their prototype. And then rather than pitching an idea, they would be coming and pitching evidence from implementation. And that would also be open to anybody who submits evidence from their prototype. So we believe that through those process changes that we'll be able to support more innovation, even those that we're unable to fund financially, we'll be able to support them in other ways. And just for a little bit of context, so the goal behind that is creating more winners in this process. Less than 10% of applicants for this fund received funding. And just for a benchmarking context, 12% of applicants are admitted into Harvard Business School. So this is an incredibly incredibly competitive process, and the recipients here should be very proud, and we're very proud of the ideas that they came. But as a system, we want to be supportive of more of the ideas. And then as a kind of a technical process moving forward, one of the efforts behind the Innovation Fund is to support innovations of all sizes, and we saw asks of across the entire spectrum, and we did not have any structures put into place that evaluated small asks against small asks and big asks against big asks, and that's one of the things that we heard from our applicants and our committee members as well. So that's one of the things moving forward that we think will improve this process. So as Dr. Glass mentioned, we are looking for some direction in how we move forward with a process to support innovation. So in my conversations with applicants, they expressed a desire for us to open up a second round as soon as possible. So the timeline here we'd be able to open this up tomorrow with a second round of applications, which would then go through the design sprint, the prototyping of pitches, and then applicants would be notified by the end of the school year, and then in this timeline, they would have all of the 18-19 school year to implement funds. If we were to go with this timeline, we would essentially be committing the $1 million budget ask item. So if that's not something that we're willing to commit to yet, we also have a second timeline in which we would open up an innovation process in September of next year.
Let me make just a slight correction on that, Tom. So I think under Proposal A, we're asking for the process to start immediately. The board won't finalize, nothing's really determined until the board finalizes the budget. And so we'd have to make a caveat in the process, just like we did in February. If the funds are not appropriated, the innovation dollars are not going to flow. So I think that's the right way to approach it, is that we run this process. If we're going with timeline A, it's contingent on the board approving that later. It just as in the situation that you were in February, it does put some pressure on you to approve that because we've got this process running. So that's why we wanted to have the conversation with you.
Yeah, thank you for that correction. So those are the two different timelines that we've thought through. Whether it's either timeline, there's going to be some monetary implications for those. So I wanted to just quickly highlight those implications. So the Innovation Fund in 1.0, each of the applicants had the opportunity to articulate up to a three-year plan to implement their innovation before they were sustained. So as you can see in this, we had in this year, we had almost $500,000 were awarded to those applicants. And over the course of 3 years, funding the 10 applications would be about $1.6 million. So our recommendation is taking the roughly $500,000 that remained from the allocation of the Innovation Fund for this year, along with the $1 million budget request, to have a total for the second round of innovation at about $1.5 million. $800,000 of that would be set aside for the 10 recipients for their year two funding, which would have $700,000 allocated for new innovation.
That gives you a good idea of how this thing can roll forward every year. You're using funds that aren't allocated in the first year to carry forward and keep your innovations going over time.
Yep. And with that, I'd like to open it up for any questions and direction from the board regarding timeline and a process moving forward.
I've got a couple of process questions. First of all, I want to thank you guys for being here. I know it would be a lot more fun being in front of your awesome students implementing our vision. So thank you so much for being here. As far as process is concerned, I think I heard you correct in saying, okay, if there are 150 applicants, you want to see the 150 pitches. Is that in a different format? Is that correct? Can you describe that to me, please?
Sure. So. In moving the process forward, it would be anybody who submitted an application would be invited to pitch their event. Would be invited to a design event, yeah, in which they would then be supported to flesh out their ideas and create some type of prototype as a representation of their idea. That could be a letter from a student in the future, or creating a schedule, or creating whatever it is that would align to their idea, but they would be supported in creating some type of representation of their project. And then there'd be a couple of weeks after that design event where the charge to that applicant would be, try a small-scale implementation in your site or in your department. And then they would then have a second step where they would be submitting some evidence from their design and from their implementation that would then be their entry ticket to pitch. So it's possible that everybody who submitted would then also submit evidence and then would come to pitch, and we would be prepared to do that in a different format than the pitches that happened this time, where we'd probably have multiple rooms happening at the same time. But that's the idea around the 2.0 process.
Okay, that is very interesting, and it's very different than this one, right? So how would you, it was a 1 to 32 point scale, is that what you're telling me, as far as from beginning to you get to pitch? You would let 26 to 32, I can't remember.
Yeah, there was a 32 point rubric,
yeah,
and anybody who scored above a 24 on the rubric was invited to pitch. And the idea behind this is, again, not kind of immediately saying no to people, and saying if they have an idea and they're going through the time and effort of collaborating with their colleagues to articulate an idea that they think is going to have a positive impact, we want to support that and have them come and help us and allow us to help them to strengthen their ideas and align it with the strategic direction, and then have that, and then give them an opportunity to actually go in and try it and see what they learn.
I would be interested to see what the teachers think about that. I'm wondering if that's just a lot, more for them to do.
So I called each of the 51 folks who pitched, and I asked them that question, and they were very much in favor of the idea of having an opportunity for their ideas to be supported. There was some frustration from the more than half of the folks who went through the time to submit an application, and then if they didn't get to the pitch round, and they said, they were passionate about their ideas and they wanted opportunities to continue to develop them. So this idea really came from my conversations with them to say, how can we support more ideas at a larger scale?
Okay. So, Mr. McDermott, you don't think that we would likely increase the frustration that people feel if they're not selected? That's something I would be concerned about. I don't, we were only able to fund 10% of the total applicants, and I don't want to increase the frustration, at least not until we can increase the revenue.
Yeah. I don't anticipate that. Because the focus on this is more support. More support and more opportunities, for even if they're not financial support, that there is additional thinking that is supportive of the ideas that folks are bringing forward. having said that, it will be an additional time commitment. So I think there is that element where we as a staff are saying we're gonna be committing ourselves, our time, our energy to support more ideas, and there's a reciprocal to that from those who are applying, that they would also be committing more of their time.
I want to compliment you on having a strong, reflective kind of feedback loop to look at improvements. I would imagine that creating that set of everyone who applies as a winner, everyone who applies has that opportunity to think it through, try to build a prototype. It creates that investment in those people and their ideas and an opportunity for them to think through, what will this actually look like? What does a miniature run or pilot look like in my program? And if I am awarded the funds, great. If I'm not, what can still move forward or live? So I want to say thanks to that. The primary question in my mind is which timeline? And I appreciate the information about budget implications and thinking through what this looks like, knowing that we're making commitments to grants, many of which have multiple years of dollars that would be needed. My biggest question regarding the timeline is less about the dollars, since we won't really know that until we've finalized our budget and know all the factors, which we have a lot of information we don't know yet. It's more about who are we communicating to and what do we anticipate will be best served. So if we have a shorter timeline, is there room to get the word out? Will you just see the 90% that were funded come back to you, or will there really be an opportunity for other people to think through and submit and be a part of that process? So that's my biggest question, is what does it look like to execute on the two timelines in a way that is most inclusive to people out there with an idea that they want an opportunity to design and implement and win funds for. It's absolutely essential we're transparent that all of this hinges upon budgetary decisions that have yet to be made, but the timeline to me seems like it's more related to communications and inclusiveness.
Yeah.
As Tom mentioned, he spoke with all of the applicants in this, and we've heard this as well just going around. I think the people that are working in our schools are practitioners are aware of this tension. And what they told us is they'd rather know sooner so that they could have the whole year to expend the dollars rather than waiting until the fall and finding out then, and you have then a truncated year that during that time frame too. So I think we have a trade-off. There's a pro and a con to both of these decisions, but what we're hearing from people is that they'd rather go now, take a shot, so that they have potentially the full year to spend the money.
And I wouldn't mind if you all take a multi-pronged approach to communications, that if the window is 10 days long, send out a few reminders to people so that those who probably have that application slightly revised, ready to send out, are not the only ones you get, but that, you know, in a few more days, you remind all the rest of the great Jeffco educators and staff that opportunity is there.
Yeah, and I will echo, those are my concerns when we did this the first time about timelines. And my question is the same as it was when we started this. And I'll just ask the recipients, was it your perception that you had year one dollars and that was it? Or was your perception that you had 3 years of dollars?
3 years, that's pretty clear.
You could, in the application, you could declare how you wanted to allocate the rest of the funds.
Right.
Some people might take it up front, other people might take it through.
And so that remains my concern, that unless we fund another $300,000, the perception is that we have underfunded the beginning of second-year dollars, which I'm assuming is going to happen pretty darn fast because the first-year dollars were to have been spent immediately. So recipients are already into their second-year dollars before we even have had a time to process our next year's budget. So I have a problem with starting another fund without addressing the existing recipients and perceptions that we funded those for 3 years because we accepted these proposals that have 1.6 million and we have a million, and starting into a proposal of at least funding another 300,000 for the existing recipients before we start looking at, and maybe I'm viewing this the wrong way. I'm so excited for everyone, but I just also want the perception to be that we as board members have all these budget things, and my perception was we were funding a year, and I was really clear on that, and I would say the perception is that we've already funded 3 years and well beyond what we approved in terms of $1 million. I understand the process, but we're asking to start that process again, and I'm concerned about following through on the initial perception of what we authorized.
I would say for the recipients, it was pretty clear to us that we were able to put a 3-year proposal in, and year one was funded, and year two and three are still contingent on decisions that would be made. So we're not under the perception that it's ongoing, guaranteed, and promised for 3 years out. We know year one is promised, and spending it in a timely way is challenging. But, no, it is. But we don't believe that we're getting automatic dollars for the next 2 years.
No, mine was more the opposite of, I would imagine that you had a 3-year proposal because that's your sustainability. And if you're cut off at year one because we haven't even funded 300,000 of year two, that perception would be what was our plan?
We're very excited that we got money and we get to work on our innovation.
Okay.
So in relation to that, Matt, Mr. McDermott, do you have $1 million earmarked over the next 2 years, or is this just year one, $498,000? There's 1.6 there, but if we said, well, what's the million from this year's funding? Do you?
Millions funding these projects plus six others that you didn't hear about, and so that's $500,000 that's being spent right now. You'll have $500,000 unspent that Tom is planning on rolling forward and coupling that with the possible addition of $1 million for the next budget year. So that takes care of the year two requests. That's your $800,000 and leaves you $700,000 more that you potentially could allocate for new projects next year. And so as this goes forward, every year you're going to have to look at what's a multi-year request, what's a single-year request, how much can you carry forward from 1 year to the next, and then make some judgment calls around where you draw lines and the scores around who gets funded.
So then to complete that thought, so the $1 million is there for this year, $498,000 is being used. So is the ask for next year $700,000?
The ask for next year is $1 million again, and so that would fund the $800,000 that's already been requested, and you'd have, money left over. You'd have 1.5 total, 700 that you could issue for next year.
I said that wrong. Is the money's being accepted through applicants at 700?
The money being accepted is the $498,000. That's the amount that's being spent right now.
For next year, if we were to move forward on whatever timeline, we would be communicating to new applicants that there would be $700,000 that would be available for new innovations. To Mr. Worth's point also, is that $800,000, even if the budget was approved, is not guaranteed to recipients this year, is that they need to demonstrate implementation progress in order to get their second installment of funds. But we do anticipate that they will be successful.
Okay, thank you.
So I have to run, Mr. Chair, so I'll just leave you my recommendation. My recommendation is you move forward with the April timeline with the understanding that things can happen over the course of the budget year. It's really no different than we're making staffing decisions for next year, right, that are tens of millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars we're making on an expectation of what's going to happen with the budget next year. So that is currently going on. This is a very small example of that same issue where you don't have all the complete information to make a decision about budget, but you do have to make some decisions for next year ahead of time.
I think I'm comfortable going with an earlier timeline because they seem to feel like it's important they have all of next year.
I concur.
I think
something I'd like us to think about, though, is, I'm only out of the classroom 2 years, and I can't imagine the amount of work you guys had to do to put these proposals together while you're teaching kids. And to have them do that again right away, part of me, and at the end of the school year, which is so difficult for an educator in the first place. I mean, I'd rather have all hands on deck administration from the ad building, from the schools, to the teachers to end the year strong. And I think that really dedicated teachers might feel that way and say, forget this, man. I got to focus on my kids and make sure they graduate or make sure they go to the next grade level. I mean, I'm almost to the point where I'm thinking, should this be something, these pitches happen like even before school starts? Because during school, I mean, these guys have full-time jobs, and some of them in the elementaries are teaching 5 different preps. My thoughts, and I would love to hear my colleagues' ideas or thoughts about that, or even you guys who did put the hard work in to put these proposals together.
I think they're is this thing working? Yeah, maybe. I think the question before us really is timeline on applications for a second year. I think there are good points being made. Maybe we should hear from this year's recipients. Do you have any thoughts about timeline that you'd care to share with us?
Well, it is a time-consuming application process, and more than that, it's heart investment of really trying to do it the right way. So it is a lot of work. I think there are some people who will fall by the wayside, and I think there's others who will say, this time of year, I don't care. I care enough that I'm going to get it done. I think it's the right question to be asking.
Thank you.
I do hope that some of the steps that were taken to kind of, you've created some supports that will hopefully enable some of those challenges to be overcome. And my hope is, as we demonstrate commitment to this opportunity for innovation, that those who do say it's not within my ability to use this 10-day window, that they'll be thinking and considering what they might do in the future.
Don't you think we have people doing that right now, thinking October, because that's what we told them 2 months ago?
I will say, Ms. LaSalle, that in one of the conversations that I had with one of the teachers when I was kind of vetting the timelines with the different folks that I spoke to was, she told me that at this point in the year is when she's doing her best reflections about what she wants to do for next year. And I agree with you that this is a difficult time. There's testing, there's the end of the year. The time constraints that you're articulating are real. And what she told me was, this is a time where I'm thinking about what do I want to do next year that's different than what I did this year. And her advocacy was, if you can get another round off the ground, you can expect my application.
How about you guys, other educators? What are you thinking?
Well, I'm a classroom teacher, so this is just my personal point of view. If you told me now that I had to apply for this grant, and by the way, I only asked for 1 year of funding because those kits are not consumable. The first timeline was very tight, but I felt like it came at a time of year when I had the time to devote to it. But right now, as I look at, I'm trying to get my fifth graders and sixth graders ready for middle school. I'm in the middle of testing right now. I've just started CMAS. I got MAP testing to go. I would ask that maybe those days where teachers come back early in the fall, maybe those become the pitch days after we've had all summer to brainstorm this. But it is for a classroom teacher, it is, I would agree that it is a workload issue.
I think what I would say about this whole process is this was the first time as a teacher where I felt like I had an opportunity to make something that I knew my students needed come to life. So, I mean, Jason and I can attest to this. We were up until midnight, 2, 3 in the morning for nights in a row texting each other, trying to figure this stuff out, because it was just so exciting to finally have somebody listen to us. So we are in the middle of testing and all of those things too, but honestly, I just think the process is so cool, and if I would have gone into this having these things in the beginning of the school year, I just think of where my students would already be at and where we'd already be in the process with our particular project. So I'd say I just do it. I mean, if you feel passionately about something and you know that somebody's listening, I don't think the time of year matters. I really don't. Yes, it was a ton of work.
Other teachers?
I also think, is this on? Yes. I also think that our idea had been in the making for years. Mm-hmm. So we just had to figure out the implementation and get how are we going to get the stakeholders involved. But we have been saying for years that space needs to be done. How are we going to get it done? And in our PLC time, it was pull up that email about the Innovation Fund. And it just sparked our, all right, let's go. And we just went at it. So it might be idea dependent. Maybe some ideas take longer to develop. When we did the prototype design on Friday, I can see some ideas may take longer to, you know, flesh out. So it could also be idea dependent, I think. So time of year, I don't know. I don't think it makes you any more or less dedicated as a teacher. Mm-hmm. It just may be your idea needs more time to flesh out.
This has been a really good discussion. I think we should sort of do a round the table with the board. I want to throw out an idea, and then we'll go around and each board member, you know, can address this. Obviously, we cannot guarantee funding until we act on next year's budget. That's a simple fact, and we can't act on next year's budget till we know what the state legislature is going to do in terms of school finance for next year. So with that as a caveat, it would seem to me I can live with we, you know, start that at this time. And I think I might make a suggestion that since looking at the future, we could move this timeline back. We can move it back a couple of months because we can only fund it when the state legislature lets us know how much funding we have. So my suggestion is okay with your fast timeline, Mr. McDermott, but I would look at in the future, can we move it back? And let's see where we are as a board on this one.
Well, my attitude, I guess, is for this immediate set that we can start now, because it seems like an August timeframe isn't on the table. So I think start now so that they have the full year. Looking forward to the next year, seems to me that the January-February timeframe is the right time to be accepting the applications for the following year.
I think, Mr. Rupert, that's pretty similar to what I was trying to say.
I think that's what you meant.
I think we're close there. Ms. Stevens, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, a couple things. First of all, I think you have some ready applicants out there, because they didn't get funded the last time around. And my hope is that you guys will work hard to capture some new applicants. Secondly, you've got a process by which the actual move through from application to decision-making includes some supports that I think everybody who participates will welcome. And finally, I'll be perfectly honest, I don't always want to make a decision about timeline. I really want you all, ultimately, I believe in policy governance, and it's not the first time I've said so. So for me, I believe you guys need to execute excellently, and we will have to watch the budget situation because nothing is guaranteed. Please enable educators to access this process and dream big.
That was a no answer.
Yeah, I know.
Go for it.
Fire
away.
I had a clarifying April. Question because maybe you did answer this, and it's important to me. I'm sure it's not the case, but there might be a small implicit bias with people whose ideas were selected from the ones that weren't selected. So when you interviewed those people about timeline, what was the consensus there? The people whose pitches were not selected. What was their consensus or feedback about starting this in April versus September?
The ones who were not funded, their advocacy was to start it as soon as possible.
Okay, so then my next question is, am I correct as part of this process, you would be receiving more honed-in pitches that were same concepts of last time but maybe presented a little bit differently or more aligned with the rubric now that they had a little more time to experience that? Is that correct?
Well, yeah, and I think that the pitches in this round would be different because they would be based off of their experience from having attempted to implement something, whereas this time it was articulations of the ideas.
Okay. So you would be capturing a percentage of the primary group, adding to that with new participants. Okay. I'm struggling with the timeline. I just, again, same concepts before. I want to make sure that it's open to as many people, and that's why I appreciate the feedback from the people that went through the process that were not selected. They might have a different perception, so that helps me.
I do want to thank you for closing the feedback loop and talking to all of those people that were not selected for the pitch. That's so important. But I just want to say that I do have a problem with the accelerated timeline. I could see accelerating it, you know, so I would say let's stick with B, which was our original timeline, if this were to be funded again. I could possibly see, to even make it easier on our educators, to try to have this happen, great idea, the first couple days before school starts, when they're not trying to meet the needs of 150 students a day, and doing this on top of that. That is how I feel right now, and then I did have a question after all of us go through about types of things that were funded. So after all of us, I don't know. It can be an individual question for outside of this. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So I guess I'm going to try to summarize this. We don't have a unanimous consensus on this particular issue. That's fairly obvious. And yet, I think we probably do have a majority direction that we can move forward with this timeline. There was a suggestion, I think you guys should look at how it would play out if we actually had the actual presentations on those days when teachers come back to work. Would that be advantageous to the process, at least for this coming year? And then there is a suggestion that if we are able to fund this year, and we don't know that, and we won't for a while, but if we are, then in the future, we look at bumping the timeline back to relieve some of the pressure that is on teachers when we launch an innovation campaign like this. I would like to say that I'm certainly pleased with the way the Innovation Fund has impacted our organization, and I'm pleased with the conversations that obviously occurred out there in our world, and that is something that I hope we can support in the future if revenues allow and that sort of thing. So, Mr. McDermott, have we given you, and by the way, Christopher Hsu, thanks for joining us in Jason's absence. Mr. McDermott, have we given you the direction? Is this enough direction for you to move forward?
Yes, I think it is. Thank you.
With reservation, I think.
But, yeah, I will confer with Dr. Glass, and we'll make a decision.
Okay. And my colleagues, are there any other comments on this topic?
I just had one process question, and maybe having had the opportunity just to watch some of the pitches, which was really fun to do, mm-hmm. and then the materials you provided to us, which were very helpful. Was there an intent to have different panels for the different presentations? And if so, could you just perception-wise explain why?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
So the in the formation of the pitch committees, my priority was allowing any person who was invited to pitch to also serve on the committee. So the my priority was complete transparency in that process.
Great.
So with that, there came some variability in the members of the committees because each person who was invited to pitch was not able to spend the 15 hours at the pitches during that week. So based off of time commitments and a priority, for my prioritization of transparency in the process, that's why the the members of different committees were different, but each operated within the same rules and structures. Okay. So I believe it facilitated a very fair scoring process, and I think that the tiered element in terms of the size of the ask is going to make it a more equitable process moving forward. Okay. If moving forward.
All right, I appreciate that.
Yep. Thanks.
To those of you who joined us at the table today, thank you for another engaging conversation on today's study session. We appreciate your time, we appreciate your insight and wisdom. That will conclude this topic. I would like to announce for our public that we have moved item 3.05 on this study session, which is the JEFCO online enrollment project update, to our April 16th meeting. So with that, as information for the public, this study session is adjourned. Thank you all.
You too.